Welcome to Motivated to Lead Podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us again for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. This week, we're happy to have with us Al Carey. Al is a leader. He most recently was the CEO of PepsiCo North America. And he has had just an incredible career of building teams and leading people. And he serves currently as executive chairman of Unify and is also on the board of Home Depot. He serves in a nonprofit organization, the Bridgeport Rescue Mission, on their board. And he has some great lessons he's going to share around leadership and, managing during this time in our history. And he's got some great thoughts he's sharing with us today. Looking forward to our conversation with Al. I guess first off, can you give us just a little bit of an overview of your career and just kind of a high level of kind of your story?
Well, sure. I went to the University of Maryland, and when I graduated from there, I started with Procter & Gamble in their sales department. Now, I didn't even go to school for business. I went for poli-sci, and I ended up getting recruited by Procter & Gamble, and then they trained me to be a salesperson and into management. I eventually ended up going to Frito-Lay. So I spent 38 years at PepsiCo and just retired a year and a little bit ago. And my last job was the CEO of North America Business for PepsiCo. Since then, the couple other things I do is I'm the chairman of the board of Unify, which is a textile company in North Carolina, making sustainable materials for athleisure. And I'm on the board of Home Depot and my university, the University of Maryland, and the Bridgeport Rescue Mission.
Okay.
So I'm busy after retirement. Still working almost a full week.
Well, that it's great. I know we connected. You were on the you're on the board of a nonprofit that we've done work for, and definitely right. Met back then. But I guess, knowing this is a question I like to ask almost every guest that we have on, now that you've had an incredible career and continue to stay very active, knowing what you know now, if you were able to go back and talk to a 22-year-old Al and give him some advice, what advice would you give him?
That's a good question. And I feel grateful for everything that happened in my career. A lot of people helped me get to where I was, but you know, one thing I've discovered is I'd say leadership is more important than I even imagined. So on a skill set review, you take a look at analytics, you take a look at sales ability, insights. It is clearly leadership. People want to be led. And it's really important for a leader to not only have confidence, but also to give confidence and to serve others. And what I finally learned as I went on is that your role as a leader is more to remove obstacles than it is to tell everyone what to do. Now, assuming you have the right team working for you, and that has to happen. But I would, you know, my recommendation to myself was have more confidence in the early days. Expect more of yourself, but then give to your people and help them develop by, you know, giving them confidence. And it really makes a difference. As I look at some of these young people that we've developed over the last few years at my last job at PepsiCo, what I'm most proud of is seeing a bunch of them elevating through the system. And it's remarkable. Once those young people get some confidence, they can step up. If they're always playing defense and looking behind their shoulder, it's they won't develop. And I remember a couple of jobs where I didn't have confidence and you stagnate. And then I remember a couple of executives that I worked for who really gave me confidence by acknowledging that my ideas were good, that were, you know, gave me confidence by complimenting me in front of large groups or promoting me or whatever it was. It's just such an important thing. So it may sound vague, but I think if you're a young person coming up through the ranks, if you have a leader that can give you a little bit of confidence in yourself, then you are able to give it to someone else. That's the one I'm, and you know what? It's the same thing in sports. It's the same thing in parenting. It's, you know, you can build people and nurture them. And this is a really important learning that I've had.
So this is a unique time in our history. We've I think it's evident that we need leadership now more than ever, especially during this crisis that we have. That's worldwide. What thoughts do you have around kind of leadership during this time of crisis or adversity? What do leaders need to be doing maybe differently than they would during a normal time?
So when you asked me about this, you know, that this might be one of the topics we talk about, you know, managing through adversity. Wow, now is the perfect time for talking about this topic. And I would say that over the years, I counted up the number of jobs I've had. It's something like 20 in my career, 20 different assignments, let's call them. And, you know, not everyone was a promotion. Some were laterals. In fact, one or two were backward moves. But overall, out of the 20 jobs, I had six or seven where I had to totally turn something around. We were in adversity, either because we did it to ourselves or because we were in a difficult time, like right after 9/11 or the collapse in 2008. But what I noticed is when your organization gets into an adversity situation, there's a tendency to play defense, and everybody's very careful about not making decisions or moves that could possibly blow up on them. And therefore, there's a lot of caution. And I actually notice the team starts backing up and they start playing on their heels because they don't want to make a move because they're afraid it'll blow up. And I noticed in a time of adversity, everybody kind of gets in the corner and talks about how bad things are. When I've learned through experience now that during these times, now's the time to play offense, because as the world's moving and shifting, you can actually get ahead by playing offense because everyone else is playing defense. And I'm not talking about being arrogant. I'm just talking about setting targets, keeping the team motivated to play offense and to think that you're going to make this an advantage over time. So I read this book by Eric Weinmayer. And he's the blind guy that climbed Mount Everest and the other six peaks around the world. It's an amazing story. He has a book called The Adversity Advantage. And I'll tell you what, I've read that book and I know him well. He's come and he spoke at many of our events. And when I hear his story, I think, my God, if he could climb Mount Everest totally blind and depending on the people that are around him to help him make it, wow, that's taken an adverse situation, becoming blind and turning it into an advantage of what he's been able to accomplish. But I really believe that the leader sets the tone during adverse time, and the troops will take the guidance from the leader. So your responsibility, and I don't care if you're leading two people or 100,000 people, your approach is going to make a big difference, and especially on young people. And then when they grow up into the business someday, they're going to look back and say, I remember when we went through this adversity and here's how we did it. And they'll move forward and they'll bring the people along with them. It's a remarkable thing to watch, because in a couple of my last maneuvers, tough situations, I see the young people now that have moved into the key roles have learned from that experience. I had one experience where I thought our company was going to get split up. We had an activist investor that was being really tough, and our company did not deserve to be broken up. In fact, we were one of the premier companies. And my response to the team, I have these big town hall meetings, and they'd ask me, do you think we're going to be split up? And I said, absolutely not. But I will tell you this, I don't care if you're an activist investor or a non-activist investor, every investor wants their stock portfolio to improve. So we just need to deliver the results and not worry about all this stuff going on. And I tried to keep the team focused on positive movement in the right direction and even celebrate the little wins. And after a while, not only did the activist investor leave, but they made a great profit and we turned our business around. But it all had to do the way you coach your people through this.
So during this time of keeping the team focused, there's a lot of distractions, and we were just talking before we got started that everybody's on Zoom today, and there tends to be an exhaustion that goes with that. But what would you say to a leader just to keep his team or her team focused as far as during this time? Is there anything that that you've been doing that maybe has helped? I know you're doing a lot of work on the boards that you serve on, but what would you suggest?
I'm pretty active in one company right now, and I'm the chairman of it, but I'm an executive chair, which means I'm actually in the day-to-day business. So right. I got to tell you, this is a unique group because we made some change, made some of the right changes in the leadership, and it's a resilient, positive group. I don't have to, you know, make them believe in the future. They already do believe in the future, but you got to communicate frequently. So even if it's Zoom, I know I don't like Zoom. I get tired of it. I did 10 in a day sometimes. Right. And after a while, you'd say, well, it's better than what we would have had. We would have had conference calls. At least you can have some kind of a view of your people. But you got to put frequent updates. Don't make them long, but frequent updates with your folks. Make sure you're not just talking to your direct reports. Like last week, I had a series of probably 10 meetings, and I asked for the function head plus several of their key folks to be in the meeting so I can give them a chance to present and talk about their business and see if there's anything I can do for them. So I always end the meetings, these meetings, with what can I do for you? And what do you think about the business? You know, those two questions I've learned over the years are really important. What can I do for you? And then what do you think? And give them a chance to weigh in, because what I fear is if during this pandemic, and if you don't have frequent communications, the group goes stale. Mm-hmm. They don't seem to be as inspired as when it's before. So I just say frequency of communication, continually putting the goals out in front. Because the pandemic has hurt a lot of businesses, including ours, you got to put realistic goals in front of them so that they feel like they can achieve them. And when they achieve them, you celebrate them. Make sure you're sending out notes. Every employee loves to get a handwritten note that says, "Congrats, hey, great job on this. We really appreciate what you're doing." And I've seen some people in my years gone by, I wrote them a note and they posted it up on their board. Mm-hmm. And they say, "Al, did you see, I got your note from 3 years ago." And I think, wow. I mean, I didn't realize it was that big of a deal. Anything sure. You can do to make it more personal is really important.
So, and I've heard you do a talk to some college students where you talked about kind of when you were at PepsiCo, which is kind of the overall vision for the organization. And I think it was described as performance with purpose. Yeah. Talk a little bit about that idea of maybe that purpose of rallying people around a purpose. And I think it's probably applicable to today, and the employees need to know what they're doing is mattering.
Well, I'd give my old boss, Indra Nooyi, credit for that. She came up with this vision 13 years ago called performance with purpose. And each of us then went off in our own divisions. I had North America, other people in Asia and Europe, and had, you know, I went out and executed it with a twist that made sense for your local region. But the idea was PepsiCo has always been known as a high performance organization. You know, stock performance is good. A lot of pressure on delivering the goods, a lot, to the point where we were sometimes known as a rough place to come to work. And this idea of performance with purpose was very appealing to not just the young people in our organization, but the old people and the street and our investor community. But what it meant was we're still going to have this high level of performance, but we're going to do it with purpose, not just at any cost. We never do it at any cost, but I mean, you know, being so focused on the one thing. And what that meant was purpose in three areas. One was we were going to make our products healthier. Second, we were going to be a significant reduction in our carbon footprint in the environment. And third is the way you treat your people. And we talked about cherishing your people. There's a big difference between, you know, running your team hard and getting high results and nurturing your people so you develop their career and develop them as a person as well. And I thought over the course of 12 or 13 years, that was a very successful. I mean, we made significant improvements on taking out sugar and fat and sodium and worked on quite a bit of improved quality of products. We also made giant strides in environment, particularly on water usage. And the other one was, and fuel reduction. And the third one was people, which I got the most out of. I kept working in PepsiCo for 38 years. not because, I mean, I loved the products, but I was doing it because I loved seeing the development of our people, and especially the ones I brought off college campus. One's now the CEO of North America Beverages. The other guy I picked up as a junior sales guy, who is Stephen Williams. He's now the first African-American CEO in the history of PepsiCo. He runs Frito-Lay North America. And to see those two come up from the ground up is a very rewarding experience, more than getting promoted yourself.
I know you've talked about servant leadership, and I'll say this about you. What I've heard about you is that you don't just talk about it, but that that's part of kind of who you are. I know the nonprofit that we worked with, that you serve on the board, that you were active in serving, and people there probably didn't even know who you were. You were there just to serve and to give. Talk a little bit about the importance of that for a leader and to lead as a servant.
So as I moved up the ranks, I got to a certain position where now I had a lot of people reporting to me, and I realized, you know, you can't do this all by yourself. There's no way. I don't know of any executives that can do it all. But you start feeling like, I got to figure out how to engage my people so that they do the work and they get the success, and I'm an enabler and I help them through that. And what I realized is this command and control work style was not working very well. You know, you demand, so the idea is, the old model was, there's a pyramid, and at the very top of the pyramid is the CEO, and the CEO is the most important person in the company, then the senior management, then the middle management, then the front line, when it actually is the other way around. The most important person in the company is at the top. That would be the frontline organization, because they're closest to the customer and closest to the consumer. Then the next group below is the first level supervision. Then there's the middle management, senior management. The least important person in the whole company is the CEO. Once you have a strategy that makes sense, your role is to remove the obstacle for the thousands of people that are out on the front line actually doing the work. And I found when I first became a CEO, this really works a lot better than this command and control thing. So when I took over Frito-Lay, I installed this, this servant leadership model. And I called it focus on the front line. And the idea was that I could probably do more good as the CEO of that company by asking people, what are the obstacles that are getting in your way towards getting towards the goal? And when they told me, a lot of times I could get that obstacle removed very easily. I shouldn't be in my office telling the people in California what pricing they should be running, or what strategy on capital, or what sales strategy they should be doing. If I have to do that, then we probably have the wrong people running the jobs in the field. So I kind of prescribed to that strategy. I read several books on it. I watched people who did an enormously good job in that way. And I realized you can actually get better results from a large organization by serving your team than by demanding and telling them what to do. First of all, I don't know everything you can do, and I don't know any CEO that knows everything you should do. So I love this model. I worked at it for a really long time, and there's no question in my mind. If somebody might say, well, that's a soft style of management. Not really. I mean, we still had to take hard actions on some people that weren't performing. I mean, that's your role as a leader too, but how often does that happen? 5% of the time? 3%? 2%? 5%? I don't know what the number is. It's not the majority. So I felt that the majority of our people should be empowered, and I should be there helping them to remove obstacles. And I really liked the way it worked. And I found I could influence more by managing this way than by managing in this tighter environment. I also would say that in today's environment, these young folks coming off college campus today, they're totally uninspired by the command and control model. So I would suggest to a leader, you better learn the servant leadership model, because that's really the way to manage in the future, in my opinion.
You just mentioned before we got started, you're doing a lot of performance reviews with the organizations that you're a part of. You're still involved in that. Talk a little bit about your philosophy about that. And again, kind of how it correlates in putting that together so that, you know, again, you're building people and you're helping them develop and grow. Talk a little bit about how you do that and kind of your philosophy around that.
I'm a real believer in feedback. And unfortunately, over the decades, let's call it the last 30 years, I remember when our HR department was very big and we had plenty of resources and they would help administer some of the real coaching work that we do with our people and the performance appraisals and performance management. And as the years have gone on, this isn't just PepsiCo, it's almost across the board. A lot of that support has been removed as people have taken restructures and taken costs out of their system. And the first thing that goes, it seems, is training and development. Because on the surface, it looks like you don't have to have it. Well,
right.
Believe me, if it goes away, you'll really realize that you need it. So I think I think most companies have fallen backwards a little bit on the whole idea of performance leadership and giving feedback. So one of the things we did at PepsiCo was we would have our performance appraisals once a year, and that's when you administered any kind of salary increases or compensation changes. But then you had to have a mid-year check-in. Everybody had to have a mid-year check-in. And you had to report back that you did the mid-year check-in, which was amazing. And then sometimes I would meet with someone and I said, did you have your mid-year? And they said, no. And I said, well, what about your performance appraisal? And sometimes it was, no, that you can't do it. It's absolutely unacceptable. So one of the things I would do with my performance appraisals, instead of making them a gut-wrenching session, I would always start out the performance appraisal and say, over this last period, I want to tell you about where I've seen you at your best. Those words, when I've seen you at your best, light someone up. And then you got to spend some time thinking about this so you can document it. But here is when I've seen you at your best. And I always go through twice as many positives as I do negatives. And I try to limit the negatives to two or one, but I'm trying to focus. What I'll say is, here's when I've seen you at your best. Here are the good things. Now, here's what I need some help on. And here are the one or two things I need you to do. I think it's all in the way you present to someone is the way they take it. I've had some people leave those performance appraisals thinking, that was the best performance appraisal I've ever been through, because you actually took my strengths and built them up. And then you told me what I need to do. I get it. I know I need to do a couple of things differently. You can end up leaving somebody on a high, or you can destroy their morale, depending on the way you deliver. I think over time, we're going to have to put a focus on this. You notice that probably in your business, you see it. Many more companies are hiring executive coaches. And the reason for it, it's supplementing the HR role we used to have. Just don't have all those people. But I think there's an executive coach role out there that could be really valuable. I brought one in for this new company I'm working with, Unify. And boy, to have an executive coach brought in, we're paying the tab, and somebody gets 6 months of advice and guidance and direction. You can ask them any question that won't go back to your boss. And it's a very positive thing.
So you've been served on boards. You worked with boards as a CEO. Talk a little bit about that role as a CEO, as a leader. A lot of times new leaders come in and maybe the first time that they've worked with a board. What advice would you give somebody that's going to be working with a board?
Well, one thing, I learned a few lessons, and don't forget who they're representing. They're not your friends. You can have friends that are on the board, but
sure,
they are representing the shareholder, and they're there to make sure that the way the company's spending its capital and driving its future and investing for the future is going to be for the best interest of the stock price. You have to always think about that. And it might change your opinion on your approach on way you meet with a board. But I always found that whenever I had to present to the board, and even now as a chairman of a board, you want to bring in as many of your young people to present their ideas as much as possible. But don't waste their time on minutia. keep it high level and strategic, because they're there to give advice on the strategy. They're not there to manage the details and the operations of the business. There are some things that are clearly board approval. Most things are management approval, and you're just advising the board. But on the few things that require board approval, be specific, get to the point, and show what the return for the investor is, not about the, you know, you got to stay with that idea. And sometimes we don't. I've made the mistake myself.
Yeah. So you mentioned one book that you've read. Definitely want to put that on our list. What the name of the author again? The book that
is
you mentioned?
Eric Weinmayer. W-E-I-N is how it starts out, and I can't remember the full spelling, but it's a book on the adversity advantage, and it's about his journey of learning how to, he went blind at age 13, and then ended up climbing mountains, Mount Everest, all the other six peaks around the world, and now he's coaching wounded veterans on how to climb peaks. Watch the video and the movies of him. There won't be a dry eye in the house. It's amazing what he's accomplished, and he's given confidence to others too.
Sure, great. And any other books that you recommend to leaders?
These are, you'd probably expect me to say, you know, here's a really insightful business book, and I read this book called The Seven Laws of Spiritual Success by Deepak Chopra, and there's the law of giving, the law of serving, this is the law of intention. There's so many interesting things about developing your psyche, and that would help you in the business world. The other one is one by Wayne Dyer, D-Y-E-R, called Inspiration. And he's a remarkable guy. He's like Deepak Chopra, only the Western version of it. He's recently passed away. And then the other book, there's a book called Servant Leadership. I forget the author, but the book is called Servant Leadership, and it's a wonderful book, and it explains about some of the things we were talking about earlier.
Great. So outside of work, Al, what do you do to recharge?
Recharging is a really important piece. I'm not sure if I didn't have a recharge program, I would have lasted for 38 years. I would have burnt out somewhere along the trail. So here's what I do. I'm a former athlete in school. I was a runner, distance runner. I've kept up with where I work out 5 days a week minimum. But now I've moved away from running because all that pounding over the years, marathons and all that stuff, it takes its toll on your knees. So I row, or I do this Peloton bike, which I love. So I keep in fit. The other thing I try to do twice a day, and not always do I get it done, but meditate. And I don't ever put this cell phone can be great. It can be your enemy too. I never put it on my bed table. Mm-hmm. I don't want this thing going off in the middle of the night. I don't want to wake up and see the 30 emails that are waiting for me. It's going to wait. I'm going to get up. I'm going to work out, meditate, and then I'll get to it. Now, is there an emergency that comes up? Rarely. It's that much of an emergency that it can't wait for an hour or two. But I really think it's important. If you don't get control of your own power before the day starts, you'll default to every damn thing that comes to you. And you'll literally be run around by your calendar and by emergency phone calls and by crises and all that kind of stuff. You do not want that. You want to be in control of your agenda, and you want to address things calmly. I mean, one of the things I've learned is your leader has to be calm and thoughtful. And you can't do that when you let this thing run your life. It's ridiculous. I've seen some people in high-level jobs looking down at this the whole time. I'm talking to them, and I said, hello, are you there? I mean, put this down for 5 minutes and we're going to complete the conversation. I just think you really got to watch out that you don't get addicted to this iPhone.
Yep,
lots of things the iPhone does really well. Now, the other thing I would do is, everybody's different, right? Some people work around the clock constantly. I called my job 24/5. I get up on Monday and run my rear end off. I don't travel everywhere, do the job. And on Friday night, I'm going home. man, and I'm not working. Now, in my whole career, did I ever work on the weekends? Yeah, but not often. And that was, if I didn't do that, I can't do the 7 days and I'm back on Monday. I just can't do it. I'm burnt out. So I stuck to it, I'd say 85%. So when Friday night came, I was done. Would I look at my emails on Saturday morning? Yes, but I'd 1 hour. And then I didn't look at it at all on Sunday. And then maybe I looked at it on Sunday night, but I tried to minimize it and spend time with my family. And over the years, that was before these things came up, but I coached the kids in Little League. The girls didn't want me to coach them in dance, but I showed up at every dance competition. I showed up at all the hockey games out there, you know. And I think I've seen some guys miss out on their kids' adolescence, and I wouldn't recommend it, because I haven't yet met an executive yet at the end of their career that said, I wished I would have worked more hours. Many say, I wished I would have spent more time with my family. And that's a sorry situation.
Yeah, absolutely. What parting advice, if you're talking to a leader, that new leader, what would you say to them?
You know, new leaders, I'd give them the following, a couple of things. One would be, you should be bold and expect a lot of yourself. Think high. I mean, I love this idea of creative visualization. Imagine yourself 5 years out where you want to be and push yourself to get to the highest possible level. But then come back and just focus on your current job. Keep your head down and work really hard to get good results, because the promotions will follow. The results are what really counts. And the other thing I'd say is, at some point when you start having a leadership role, spend more time trying to get results through your people, you know, where you're empowering them and you're working with them and coaching them and developing them. So you get the benefit of many doing the work rather than just you up there telling everyone what to do. And you don't know everything. I don't care how smart you are. I had a boss that was the absolute greatest. He was, you know, nationally known. I'd call him a celebrity CEO at one point. But after working directly for him for a while, I realized he's got some big blind spots.
Sure.
So this is, you know, and I realized, wow, you know what he does? He's actually quite weak in probably two areas. Mm-hmm. And then he's world-class in some of these other areas, world-class. I noticed that he would surround himself with people that were complimentary. Mm-hmm. And this is really something important, because I'm not a finance guy. I came up through sales, marketing, and field operations and all that stuff. I'm never going to become, you know, a left brain financial expert. I always made sure that I had the absolute best CFO working for me, or financial head working for me. And I didn't mind if they disagreed with me. In fact, I'd encourage it. So if you're setting up a team, don't try to make everybody like you. The best thing is to have some diversity on that team, diversity of gender, diversity of culture, but diversity of experience. So if you're a strong leader with sales and marketing background, a commercial background, make sure you build a strong strategy team around you. Make sure there's a few people who are great financial experts, and then probably supply chain experts. But you're never going to know it all. So don't be afraid to admit that, and then bring in the right talent around you.
Great. Well, Al, this has been a lot of fun, and definitely appreciate you sharing some insights from a career that's pretty incredible. And you've definitely have led by example, and appreciate that, and wish you continued success in everything you're doing.
Well, thank you, Mark. It was enjoyable, and it was good being with you today.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.